All right, Richard. So before we start talking about lessons, I neglected to mention something last week when we talked about Starship Mine. I can't believe I forgot because you are so into this character for reasons that I still don't understand.
I'm ready.
Tim Russ played one of the pirate terrorists, and Tim Russ plays Tuvok.
Oh my God, my favorite character.
Yeah. So you have that to look forward to.
So Tuvok's a terrorist?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he is.
But how do they let him on the ship?
It's a long story.
I guess I have to wait to see.
You'll find out in the pilot episode of Star Trek Voyager, which is called Caretaker.
Oh, so he like kills his caretaker.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to the Voyager.
Just go with that.
I'm ready.
Okay. Maybe we should just write our own Star Trek Voyager scripts instead of watching it.
I'm really looking forward to Voyager.
You know, I actually am too. We don't need to have a long conversation
about
this or anything.
We have like 3 years before it's time.
You know, we'll do a check-in with the audience and let them know what our plans are when we get closer to the end of the Next Generation. But we're getting there. It's going to be interesting, I think.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk about lessons.
Okay.
I'm getting an impression that you didn't really like it.
I mean, I think it's really lovely to watch, you know, scene after scene of Picard and the lady playing Frère Jacques on the flute and piano mat. That was lovely.
I love this episode. I think it's probably one of the best ones of the sixth season.
Okay. I liked the second half a lot better than the first.
Because you like to see people suffer.
Yeah, and I don't like music.
Right. You like music.
I like real music, okay. You know, like Nirvana and like the Smashing Pumpkins, right. Not like Frère Jacques.
Okay. Well, this has been a very sort of Picard-heavy season, hasn't it? I mean, he hasn't had a lot of character episodes in the like season 5, I want to say.
Yeah.
And so far he's had Tapestry, he's had this one, he had Starship Mine, which was like a pretty Picard-centric episode. So I think Patrick Stewart, I don't know, maybe he was like really petitioning to get more episodes or something. I don't know. But I like this one a lot. I think it's a really, really understated, nice character episode. Nothing really happens in it.
Yeah.
But
it's another of those episodes that's not at all sci-fi.
Right.
Or the sci-fi bits are really incidental to it.
Right. And I like it when Star Trek pulls that off.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, and so I was about to say, you know, part of the problem is what the hell is her name?
Oh, I don't remember her first name, but her last name is Darren.
Darren. So, I mean, Darren is great. She's fine. She's, you know, smart and sassy and French, and she
she's not French.
Yes, she is. She has an English accent.
Oh, right.
Remember in the world of the Next Generation?
She doesn't have an English accent.
Doesn't she? She has some kind of accent.
Did you watch this episode?
Maybe not.
Yeah, no, she doesn't have an accent. Oh,
so she's not French.
No.
But he is.
Yes.
I thought she had some kind of... Anyway, the point is she's great, and, you know, I really like that they connect this as a direct sequel to The Inner Light. At first, I didn't realize how directly they were going to go with it. Like, I thought, okay, it's just very profound that he's playing this flute.
I wouldn't call it a sequel.
Well, I mean, in a way it is, because it's not sequel, but this is directly leading from that. In other words, this is... I believe this is the first person that he's connected to since losing, you know, since The Inner Light.
Yes.
And so, I mean, this is very much an episode about, in a way, second love rather than a first love. And I think that makes it a little more interesting. And I think it makes the ending a little more profound because, frankly, he's, you know, Picard finds this decision kind of so agonizing because this would be the second, you know, person he's lost like this rather than just the first. Do you know what I mean?
But a little bit. Extrapolate out a little bit more.
In other words, she's kind of the first woman that he loves after his wife died. In a very particular sense, that's who this woman is to him. It's not just, you know, the first person that he's managed to connect with. And so the main arc of this episode is Picard able to separate, you know, his duty from his emotions, and, you know, he turns out that he really can't.
Could you even say, and I don't know, I'm positing this as a possible theory, that, you know, Picard is a character that before The Inner Light very much kept that part of his self back.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had sort of little bits and pieces of that with Crusher and with Vosh, but he's never really fallen for anyone before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, could you argue that his experiences in the Inner Light on that planet sort of made him realize what he had given up? And so he's a little more ready to fall in love.
I mean, it kind of in a way taught him as much to play the flute as it did to love somebody, to let somebody in and to, you know, learn to trust and be intimate with someone in the way that.
Yeah.
And yeah, he is able to use those. I mean, let's call them skills for a second. He's able to use those skills with Darren. And yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I don't know. Normally the way that they've handled the relationships not working out, again, pretty much every single character is single because they had the choice between, you know, love or duty, and they chose the Enterprise. You know, they chose their career.
Right.
And, you know, in most of those cases, it's implied that that's just because, you know, either it's inconvenient, you know, at the end when he's saying, you know, well, people do this, you know, we could have a distance thing. I mean, I think they make it clear that distance relationships, even in, you know, this, even in the future, still suck. And, you know, you can't blame anybody for not really wanting to do that. So either it's been distance or everybody's been so busy. Here it's saying, well, it's even worse than that because, you know, Picard has to deal with the fact that they are on dangerous missions all the time. And he has to make calls that he can't. I mean, he's given up romance in order to be the captain.
Right. Well, he's given up a lot of things in order to be the captain.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, we'll talk about the chase in a few minutes. But I think that that also makes it very clear that Picard's given up a lot of things. I mean, in a lot of ways, the sixth season is really about the audience finding out what Picard has lost and sort of finding out, you know, a lot about Picard's history that we didn't know before.
Yeah.
In a way. And so I think this is part of that as well, which is that, you know, Picard made a choice to go into Starfleet, and Picard made a choice not to have a family, and Picard made a choice not to have a wife.
And I think the episode is saying he can't really have it all. You know, maybe somebody could, but Picard specifically can't make that leap and can't.
I mean, I think he could to a certain degree.
But
I
as
think
long as
that
he's captain, anybody who is on the Enterprise that he has a relationship with, he's going to potentially have to make that call.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, he could, of course, have a wife that isn't in Starfleet.
Yeah, but is he going to be? Yeah, but at the same time, number one, is that's going to deal with the, you know, either we're going to have to deal with the distance thing, you know, or she's, he doesn't, Picard is not the kind of person who's just going to want to have a housewife, is he? You know, he's
right.
Anyone he's ever fallen in love with, and we're talking about Vash, and we're talking about, you know, Darren, and we're talking about Dr. Crusher, has had a very specific professional career, even if it was as, you know, shady as Vash's.
Yes, but I think that you're forgetting about Keiko O'Brien, for instance. She is not a housewife. She has a job.
Yeah, but I mean, but for O'Brien to marry her, that's no problem. O'Brien is never going to have to make an order that's going to have to put his wife into danger. Picard's going to be the one making that. If Picard marries,
Picard is going to send the Arbor, I forget what she is. She's a botanist. She's a botanist.
Yeah, and you know, Dara is a cartographer. I mean, you know, I think this episode kind of makes it clear that yes, probably.
I think this is kind of an uninteresting argument, but I think that there are women that could be on the Enterprise having a career that are not in Starfleet that he could be married to. But of course, that also is a very small pool of women.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I think we're kind of saying the same thing, which is that this is going to be extremely hard for him to pull off in any way.
The point of this episode, the point is that as captain, he does have to make decisions regarding personnel. And again, even innocuous ones, it says, are different. Something as simple as a personnel transfer is kind of fraught with, while it's not a life or death situation.
Right.
It does open up questions of, well, it's an awkward situation for a lot of people. I think Picard is realizing that becoming captain, he had to give up kind of the family part of himself, and maybe he's locked into captain. You know, there are so many responsibilities and conflicts as captain that no relationship would be easy. And while no relationship ever is easy, I think Picard finds the relationship with the Enterprise to be a lot easier than a relationship with the person, and is able to, would prefer that, frankly.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, we didn't touch on this when we talked about Starship Mine last week, but that's making me realize that, you know, that's kind of why he's so protective of the Enterprise in that episode, because the Enterprise is probably the most important woman in his life to some degree.
Which is something that, again, we've seen even since Kirk's day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with all of that, and I want to talk about Picard more, but I think there's I want to talk about Darren, because I think that she's a very interesting character, and she is a kind of woman that we are seeing more of on the show, and I think Dr. Crusher is also becoming this kind of woman to a certain degree. You know, there's that great scene in Picard's quarters where he says, "Well, you can give up your career," and she says, "Well, you can give up yours." You know, like, she's... What I like about her is that, you know, we have seen instances in the past, especially I think you could make this argument with a lot of Geordi's plot lines, where the women that he's fallen for are not actualized characters so much as they are Geordi's wet dreams made real. I think that Darren is a fully actualized character. You know, she definitely is a competent officer. She pushes back. She has her own personality. She has her own interests. She's her own person. And I like that. Yeah. I also like the fact that she's an older woman as well.
So
she's age appropriate for Picard in a way that Vosh wasn't.
It's funny. She reminds me a little bit about Dr. Pulaski in some ways, given that, you know, I mean, she does a few things that are slightly off standard procedure. I'm just thinking about the fact that she has this experiment that's taking power from everything, you know, the fact that she's all, you know, snapping at Picard when she first, you know, all of those things, you know, she's not just going to blindly follow, you know, she may not completely fit in, but of course, Picard is charmed by all of that now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think he, you know, he likes that. He obviously likes that she's doing all of these random experiments, you know, even if it ties up the ship's resources, so...
Well, and I also think that she's a kind of character that we don't see on this Enterprise very much, which is a character that is a bit more pushy.
Yeah.
Maybe pushy is not the right word, but, you know, I don't want to gender her, but I think
Riker, you know, acts towards her. He's at once like, you could tell he's happy that he has an officer who knows what she's doing and, you know, is showing initiative, but he's also, you could also tell that he's a little annoyed at the fact that she's always coming with a request or something like that, you know, but I think that's an interesting choice too, you know,
but is she, that's kind of the question, you know, because I think the episode is smarter than that. And the episode makes the point, at least maybe not directly, but indirectly, that Riker is being a little unfair to her. And
he's in a way kind of feeling like, does he need to overcompensate? You know, as he says, you know, she asked for a personnel transfer. He has to make sure that every single detail of that personnel transfer is, you know, 110%, you know, necessary, because again, if there's even the, you know, Picard doesn't seem to really care and he doesn't seem to really worry. And it's not really till the end that I think he seems to admit that there's something, you know, that there may be problems, but you know, I think Riker is more aware of any potential conflicts of interest than Picard wants to be.
I think so, but I think that Riker is being a bit more obtuse, I think, than perhaps is warranted. He's a little uncomfortable with it, which is perhaps understandable and perhaps not. I think the larger question and why they sort of bring that up in the episode at all is, number one, of course, to sort of, you know, set the table for the idea that this is going to cause problems, their relationship. And of course, later on in the episode, when Picard orders her down to the planet, of course, that's a problem as well. I just wonder about, you know, the end of the episode, because she is, you know, you know, she's kind of like, you know, Picard's kind of like, well, I don't know if you should go down. And she says, well, Riker thinks that I'm the best person for the job, which is why he chose me. And of course, Picard kind of goes along with that. You know, Picard is being protective of her, not because he's being protective of her because he's in love with her and in a relationship with her. But I think, you know, the end of the episode when she comes back and he says, well, look, you have to leave. Well, he doesn't say that, but she volunteers the information, because I think they both realize that, you know, Picard even says that he couldn't put her in danger again.
And I think it's even, I mean, it goes further than that, because she says, like, I knew that if I died, you'd blame yourself, you know, even a little bit. And, you know, again, as a Starfleet officer, you know, Darren is fully okay. If she died on that planet, she would be fine at that. That's what she signed up for. That's what she knew she was capable of doing. And, you know, it's more her, you know, the saving the people on the planet is more important, you know, and she knows all of that. But she also knows that, you know, they can't just separate and be a captain and an officer, you know, again, in if it's just any other officer, if she, you know, and any of the people that they lost there, Picard is broken up about. Picard hates losing people, you know, of course. And yet he doesn't necessarily always blame himself if he made the right call. He would have made the right call. He made the right call regarding her in this case.
Well, of course, it's messy. I mean, he has feelings for her. He has, you know, personal feelings for her in a way that he doesn't have for the rest of the people on his staff, you know? And I think that, you know, again, Picard has always been portrayed as a different captain from Kirk in the sense that he's much more careful about his relationships, and certainly he's friendly with people. I think that it seems like Crusher and Picard are having breakfast every morning. I mean, he definitely has friendships, and I think Crusher and Picard have a very long-standing relationship that is very complicated.
Yeah, they have a very – I like the way this episode makes it very complicated, because Crusher's jealous even though she Crusher's very jealous even as she knows that she has no right to be jealous.
Right.
And I like that.
Yeah.
You know, this is – you know, she has a lot of very specific feelings towards him. You know, she as much wants to make sure that, you know, he's with somebody who's, you know, good for him as, you know, maybe there is a tiny part that still thinks that, you know, well, maybe we. But, you know, knowing that, you know, Crusher knows that Picard is going to have to deal with all of these issues with – someone under his command if he has a relationship with them. Probably that's, you know, that is certainly an underpinning of why Picard and Crusher have never, you know, maybe never re-explored that, because, you know, if he's going to send the cartographer to dangerous missions, she's the chief medical officer. Right. She's in things all the time. It's not going to be, you know, it's not even worth considering, I think, at this point.
Well, and also, frankly, I mean, we've had conversations about Riker and Troy and why they haven't gotten together. And, of course, this may be the reason why as well.
Yeah.
You know, Riker is also in that kind of position. And it's perhaps just not appropriate for command-level officers to have relationships with people that they may have to send on dangerous away missions or whatever, right? That all makes sense to me. I think that, you know, what's interesting about this episode is it's a way for us to see a different side of Picard, and it really kind of doubles down the idea of him as sort of the man alone, and, you know, he's kind of always on his own, and he's a private person and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a private person because he's a private person, but he's also a private person because he has to be, in a sense. I mean, he is the figurehead of the ship, and he's not just, you know, he can be Jean-Luc to Crusher, and he can be Jean-Luc to Riker, and maybe even to Troy and Data and people like that, but on the whole, he can't be Jean-Luc. He has to be Captain Picard.
Yeah. I mean, he's always had a very tension between his public and private personas. I mean, he knows that Picard is the kind of person who is the captain of the flagship of the Federation. Everybody knows who he is. Everybody's watching him. You know,
we've made the point that you know, in universe, Picard is famous.
Yeah. At this, you know, and he's good at that. He loves that. He's, you know, that's his life. That's his choice. At the same time, he's also personally not really comfortable with everybody watching him and looking at him. You know, we wouldn't say that he's a fame whore in the sense that, like, Kirk would be, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I think, you know, he certainly hates the idea that, you know, the second he starts, you know, being interesting to someone, everyone on the ship knows it. Because, you know, he's the captain. Everybody, he walks into a room, everybody sees him. He's not just, you know, a random person in 10 forward with someone.
Right, right. And so, but that's, I think, the indication there that, you know, they have to be more circumspect in their relationship, and they're doing things in his quarters more. They're not going out in public as much, you know, things like that.
Well, it's, again, as the captain, he has responsibility. The show has really hammered in the theme of sacrifice for something larger than yourself. And he, you know, this episode almost seems like it's going to say, well, Picard really, you know, maybe does figure out a way to have it all. Maybe it really was just meeting the right person, because anybody he'd met with, you know, before was not in Starfleet or had a different thing. You know, there are no real obstacles, you know, between the two of them. It's not like, you know, they're not interested in each other. It's not like, you know, there are any other reasons. It's not like they don't have time to see each other. But at the same time, you know, yeah, maybe you can't, you know, be a captain and be married. Maybe it's just way too difficult.
I mean, I think you can, you know, but again, I think that it has to be a different sort of relationship, yeah, with a different sort of woman.
And maybe Picard can't do that, you know?
I think that's fair. I think
definitely Picard can't do that. Picard can't be the kind of person who's an effective captain and an effective husband in a way. He has to pick one or the other.
That could be. I mean, I don't know that the episode goes so far to say that, but I...
And that, yeah, that is more going by the series rather than this particular episode.
Yeah, yeah. I do wonder, though, about... I mean, this is kind of an aside, but the sort of long distance aspect of it, because of course at the end of the episode we're not having that conversation. And you know, it's funny because I also remembered her dying in this episode for some reason.
Yeah.
But now that I rewatched
it, I thought that's what was going to happen.
Well, I think that would have been entirely too dark for this show.
This episode starts off as a Manic Pixie Dream Girl episode and then becomes something different, and I'm happy that it doesn't stay in that. But if it had been straightforward, she would have died.
Oh, I disagree with you. I don't think she's supposed to be a Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
I feel like it had elements of that, but transcended that. She teaches him how to play music. She's having him run around. He's happy. You know, it's the, you know, it
I think that
a lesser episode would have done that with her.
Yeah, but I think that there is a, I mean, I think that that's, I don't know, the whole Manic Pixie Dream Girl thing, I think is a valid criticism of a lot of stuff, but I also think that it's not valid in this case because she is very much portrayed as her own person, even in the opening scenes. And, you know, this is what the beginning of a relationship feels like.
Well,
you
know, you're no,
I know, because you don't love, you don't hate, you don't, you're not, you're capable of love, Richard.
I know. I love Star Trek.
That's good.
I do now.
But I think that, you know, that's what the beginning of a relationship feels like. I mean, everything is perfect and everything is interesting. And, you know, this person does seem transcendent and all this kind of stuff. And I think that's hard to get across without it seeming cheesy. And I don't know that this episode succeeds, but at the same time, I like it. You know, it's charming.
I mean, I think the thing, I will say, like, I personally didn't like the first half of this episode, but that's because my heart is a small, cold lima bean. And,
well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, and I'm not trying to be funny, but you know, I think that there is a you know, there's a difference in the two of us, which is that I'm much more of a romantic than you are, even as you're more optimistic than I am, which is strange. But, and this may be just how the beginning of the episode or the first half of the episode is being colored in both of our portrayals, of course.
You know, or both
of how we're viewing it, really.
And also keep in mind, I may have been fitting a bit of this episode into some other, you know, tropes that this episode didn't quite fall into. In other words, again, I could see a lesser episode of television or a lesser show doing that with this character. You know, she's kooky, she's funny, you know, she teaches him to love and then she dies and he's still playing the flute, you know, having learned a lesson. And so I saw the episode heading into that direction. But again, around the halfway point, it veers away.
Yeah, and I also think that that would have been a much more strong criticism of the episode if she had died, of course. What I did want to say, though, is that the whole long-distance aspect of it seems problematic because, of course, can't they do something with, like, I don't know, like the holodeck and, like, subspace communications and just, like, be in the same room together even though they're not?
Yeah, but it's still that they're not.
Yeah,
you
but,
know,
I mean,
I guess
what's the difference?
I don't know. I mean, that's...
Does it just take up a lot of bandwidth? I don't know.
I mean, I think the show makes it clear that while there is certainly a very big gray area relating to the holodeck and all of that and simulations and things, that it wouldn't be enough. It would be tiding over until they actually got to saw each other. And let's face it, how often does Picard really go on shore leave?
You know? Not often.
Yeah, exactly.
Answer.
So in other words, their choices are either we have this virtual relationship that's not, you know, we're never going to really actually see each other. They're never actually going to be together. Maybe if they see each other once a year for a weekend, they'd be lucky. And they don't want that. That's not enough.
I suppose so. Yeah. And I guess the last thing to really talk about this episode with, you know, we sort of talked about it a little bit, but maybe just mentioned it, is the connection to the inner light, of course. Because, you know, again, I think that this episode, I think, is probably the only direct sort of follow-up to it. This is the only time it's ever really mentioned again. And I like it because it sort of retcons Picard a little bit in that they make him out to be a very private person. Okay. I think that all fits in with his characterization, even if that's not something that was made explicit in the past. But I think that what I like about it is that since he is characterized in that way in this episode, the fact that he's revealing sort of the fullness and the richness of that experience to Commander Darren is indicative of his deep feelings for her and how much he really does love her. You know, and so, you know, I just like the fact that the show is not forgotten that he's had that experience. And I like the fact that they're using that in a very smart way to get across exactly how he's feeling about this character.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen the flute once or twice, you know, since then we've seen him playing it. So he definitely has kept this experience, which I love.
Right.
And this does take it a step further because, again, this is the first time that he's playing with another person. You know, he's taken a solitary virtual experience, because let's face it, the Inner Light, as real as that was still a simulated experience for him. And this is bringing it fully into the real world, into the outer light of, ooh, and that's, whoa.
But not only that, I mean, not only the flute, though. I mean, he does explicitly tell her.
I mean,
you know, that's more what I'm talking about. I mean, I think all the flute stuff is really nice.
Well, the flute stuff is symbolic of,
right,
you know, that him playing the flute with her is the same as him telling her the full story.
And of course, later on, they play his flute.
Yes. I love her little piano, Matt, because even, you know, in 1992, that wasn't really impressive.
Well, I mean,
like, it's literally like that technology existed at that time. Maybe it wasn't quite as
I don't think it sounds like that, though. I think is what the point is.
But it wasn't, you know, but that you can sample something, you know, anything. You know, we have that now and it's actually not. I don't know. Like, I feel like my phone can do a lot more impressive stuff than that thing.
Yeah, I don't know if it could sound like a grand piano, though. I'm not sure about that.
You need to learn some things about sampling.
Maybe I do. All right. I will give this episode 8 firestorms.
I will give it 6 piano keys.
Also, what a shitty place to put a colony.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, why are any of these colonies in colonies? Nobody I think nobody should go into space. I think that's the message of Star Trek.
Let's put our colony on the fire hurricane planet.
I mean, I'm sure rent is really cheap. It's like living in the flood zone.
Yeah, we're the Bronx.
Or Staten Island. Anybody go to Staten Island?
Okay. Well, let's talk about the chase. What did you think?
I liked this episode, even though it ended just cheesy as hell. I liked it.
This was kind of a throwback to like a sort of original series. Yeah. Very Roddenberry sort of. I mean, he didn't write the end, of course, because he was dead, but kind of felt like the kind of thing he would write.
But that's okay, because I can handle that every so often on this. And it's Star Trek. If it doesn't get cheesy every so often, it dies.
No, of course. I agree with you. I think, like I've said before, you have to enjoy the cheese in Star Trek to really, or appreciate it at least, to sort of get a full understanding of it. But yeah, I like this episode. I don't think that it's a classic by any means. I definitely think it has some problems, and it answers a question that I'm not really sure anybody was asking.
It's an episode that makes no goddamn sense whatsoever. Let's just get this out of the way. The entire plot of the episode makes no goddamn sense.
Yeah, well, the plot of the episode is that this celebrated archaeologist finds a jigsaw puzzle in the DNA of
random
creatures
species
from 25 different planets, which has encapsulated a Skype video of a dead woman talking about how her species created every other life in the galaxy.
And how everybody should be fellowship and, you know, love. And
right.
That makes no sense. But that said, I can accept it because it's Star Trek figuring out another way of getting a message of cooperation in.
It makes sense in Star Trek logic.
Yeah, I
don't think that this ever really is something that could happen. I also think that, you know, I'm not a big fan of when Star Trek is this self-referential.
No.
I don't think that we ever really needed an explanation as for why all the alien species that we see on Star Trek are humanoid. We know why. It's because it's a TV show and they're being played by people. Like, that's fine. We don't need an answer for that.
Yeah, exactly. It's the fact that everybody's speaking. Let me put it this way. The message is in English. Why didn't she explain why she's talking in English? Like, it's one of those sci-fi conventions. Yeah, you just go with it because
– why does everybody in Casablanca speak English? It doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, it's just it's a conceit. We understand that. And I don't – you know, and yes, I think that the way that they put it together is fine, and I think you get the nice little message of cooperation, and the Romulans and the Klingons and the Cardassians and humans and everybody else, they're all part of the same circle of life, and yeah, we should all love each other and blah, da, 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 you know, and yeah, that's fine.
And I mean, let's face it, that's a message that, you know, especially around that time was all, well, we all come from the same common ancestors from a small place in Africa, so we're all human. You know, like, it's one of those kind of themes, you know? I mean, especially given that this is, you know, post-Cold War, we want to have a message of peace and cooperation, sure.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, I guess if you put it in context in, what, 1993?
Yeah. Berlin Wall had just come down or was about to come down.
A couple years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, no, 4 years ago at this point, because Berlin Wall came down in 89, Soviet Union collapsed in 91.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But the point is, this is still in everybody's head, yeah.
Well, in a lot of ways, I think, you know, this is the kind of episode that really places The Next Generation in a sort of, like, a time and a cultural context.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of, you know, The Next Generation, like we've talked about in the past, didn't really do a lot of cultural commentary. It did some, certainly. I mean, we had The Outcast, we've had other things. But it wasn't known for it in the way that the original series was, which I think is fine. You know, it's not something that we were looking for the show to do at this point. In the same way that we're not really looking for The Next Generation to have planets set, you know, on the set of Mayberry, for instance, which is what the original series did more than once. So, you know, it's a different show. It's doing a different thing. But I think that, yeah, you kind of place this in a context and kind of say this is what was going on, you know, in American society or in the world culture in 1993, that things were very, very positive. You know, the Soviet Union collapsed and, you know, Eastern Europe was starting to become democratic and we had all of these wonderful things going on and it was an optimistic age and everybody thought that the world was going to be peaceful and wonderful and turned out to be not the case, of course, but that is where this episode, I think, is coming from.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to look at the cultural commentary episodes that it does do, because then in a way that kind of, we don't really have episodes ending with this plea for peace and fellowship and community and world cooperation. So when it does make a point like that, I don't know, I think it views it as very important. I mean, this episode,
well, yeah, sure.
This episode thought the message was very important to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's dorky and earnest,
but
it's earnest and it means what it's saying.
I miss dorky earnestness sometimes.
Sure, I think so, and I think that's something that Star Trek becomes less and less known for as it goes on. And certainly, I think that the latest movies are certainly a case in point. But we'll talk about those when we get to them.
In 10 years.
10 years now, more like 5 years.
Oh, only.
But, and I think that, you know, it all works well enough. But I think at the end of the day, of course, it's a little bit of a muted message because it's nothing that we don't know as Star Trek watchers. And it doesn't seem to be anything that the Klingons, Romulans, and Cardassians are ready or willing to listen to.
I mean, they have at the end, which is kind of a problem. With the, you know, Romulan making this kind of courtesy call to Picard. And, you know, it's...
That's true.
You know, it's shown as like the tiniest first step, but it is a first step. I mean, I think it's interesting that... the Cardassians are starting to become the bad of the galaxy. They're the bad of Deep Space Nine and stuff, and of course, you know, everyone working on the show knows that.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting that the episode with the Romulans kind of saying like, look, all right, you know, maybe we're really, there is no reason for us to be fighting all the time, like, yeah, we do, you know, I don't know, like, I think it's that kind of first step between the Federation and the Romulans saying, well, there's something even worse, and what's really the point? Why are the Romulans trying to do this anymore? What are they even doing? Like,
yeah, it's a good question.
The Romulans haven't done anything really successfully in the Next Generation.
What up with the Romulans?
They started off like, we're back, and it's like, all right, I'm ready for the Romulans. I think this is them starting to say, like, look, we're just going to give up. Let's just – I don't care anymore. You know, the Cardassians are so much worse than we are. Like, let's just give up.
It's like if the Canadians tried to be the bad guy.
I know. They'd, like, just they can flood keep it us up. With poutine and moose.
They can keep it up for a few years, and then they send us Alex Trebek and Alex Keaton or whatever the fuck his name is. It's not a real person, is it? Michael J. Fox. Alex Keaton was his character.
Michael Fox, J. Fox isn't a real, wasn't really Canadian. Alex Keaton was.
Oh, you're right.
I think I would have preferred, though, if the message had turned out to be that biscuit recipe. Because, number one, it would have probably been the most delicious and nutritious biscuits ever.
Didn't strike me as like something that Klingons would eat, though, or biscuits.
No, they're just like that good. That like
they're made with like worm meal or something.
It's just everything that the body needs to survive and just never gets old. And at the very end, they're all sitting together and eating the biscuits. And the Klingon's like, well, we didn't find a weapon or something like that. And the Cardassian's like, I wanted the power, you know. And Picard's like, well, one thing we can all agree on. And the Romulan's like, that's true. These biscuits are great. Pass the butter. And everyone laughs. And, you know, then we just fade out.
I like the fact that...
it didn't end that way? Yeah, you're right.
I like the fact that Picard is the one who's bringing them all together. You know, I mean, that's something that the show has done a lot before. And that's something mm-hmm. that we expect from Star Trek and Starfleet, of course. But it is making the point that, you know, the Federation has brought the Klingons into the fold to some degree. The Romulans are perhaps not as bad as we think they are. I mean, you know, let's not forget about Face of the Enemy from a few weeks ago. And I think, you know,
again, we're seeing individual Romulans now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We're seeing individual Romulans in the same way that we were seeing individual Klingons starting in the second season or whatever.
We're seeing plenty of Romulans who are just tired of this crap, you know?
Right. So I think that that's very interesting. And I think it kind of paints the way forward for the Federation really being the one who, you know, brings all of these different empires together or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to wait until Deep Space Nine to see sort of individual Cardassians, but you will see them. So I like that. And I think it all sort of goes together very nicely. But I think the thing that's kind of... I think the thing that's forgotten about this episode, and it's what I want to talk about now, is the stuff with Picard again. Because, of course, like we mentioned before, where this has been a season where we learn a lot about Picard in his past. You know, suddenly we get this other sort of side of Picard where they sort of double down on his archaeology stuff. And apparently he was a brilliant archaeologist and had this guy that was supposed to be like the, I don't know, Noam Chomsky of 24th century archaeology or something. And turned his back on that ostensibly to go to Starfleet Academy. So it makes it personal in a way that I think is smart for the episode because it gives us stakes, you know, because if this was just an episode about, you know, Picard getting some random message from a dude that he didn't know, it would be a lot less interesting and a lot less profound. You know, in effect, what Picard is doing is honoring the memory of his dead second father, you know, and that makes it very, very profound. But what do you think? Do you buy that?
I really like this theme of the inner selves that the, you know, we have with this statue where it has all these little dolls inside of it. And, you know, because number one, that's kind of similar to my own philosophy, but I think that's really carried through in this episode. Number one, Picard, of course, the obvious inner selves of he could have been a starship captain. He could have been, you know, a family man. He could have been an archaeologist and, you know,
he could have been a used starship.
Yeah,
salesman.
Exactly. You know, all of those are authentic Picard.
Sure.
There's no one of those that is, you
know,
scientist. He is all of those things. And he does in his life manage to, you know, let different ones, you know, give free rein. It's, you know, action Picard is in there, you know, and all of that. But, you know, even further, you have the, you know, this, you know, kind of race, you know, who seeds into the other different races. That's another example of a inner selves, you know, coming out. But the thing is, I really like this episode as a sequel to Tapestry because that episode is very much dealing with Picard's regret and if I could have done this differently. And he leaves that episode saying, you know, no, I don't regret. And there is a scene, you know, that scene with Dr. Crusher where, you know, he's talking about this and he's saying, you know, oh, you know, he's making a point to say, I don't regret, you know, not being becoming an archaeologist. You know, I chose the right path. And I mean, especially after Tapestry, that's a very profound statement, because it's one that pre-Tapestry you might have questioned a little more. At this point, when Picard says, you know, no, I don't regret not becoming an archaeologist, I definitely believe him, because he has, especially post-Tapestry, examined that part of his life.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, that's actually a really astute reading of it. And I like that a lot, is that, you know, this episode does build on, you know, the sort of character stuff that we learned about Picard in Tapestry. And I think that, you know, Tapestry in and of itself, I think perhaps is not that interesting. I think it's a really good episode.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, it doesn't have a lot to say about Picard in kind of a weird way. But
it does kind of color his post appearances.
Right, exactly. It's kind of more useful to go back to as a reference point in all of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's something that I hadn't really considered before. So I think that's an interesting point.
I think it makes it clear that, you know, and he doesn't even, you know, again, while he thinks he knows it's the right thing to do to go on this adventure and to finish the work, I don't think he also regrets not doing it. You know, as Troy points out, you know, you have a ship to run, you know,
right.
It's, you can't, you know, what you didn't, you know, reject him. You decided not to give up your career that you've been working on the past, you know, and that's an important point too, you know, because Picard is authentically a starship captain. And maybe that is more of it. Maybe that inner self is larger than his other inner selves. I don't doubt that, but this episode also lets him get that archaeologist self out, and in a way which blends and does not conflict. Because I think, you know, one of the other things they're talking about Picard is, how does he blend all of these selves together? He is at the point where, while he's still in the prime of his career, he's probably close to the peak of it. You know, in 5-10 years, he's going to be getting fewer missions and doing fewer things and probably become an admiral. And, you know, he's going to probably be, or he's going to be teaching at the academy, or, you know, something like that. Like, his days are slowly drawing. And so he is kind of taking a reckoning of his life and seeing, you know, what is left to do. What else have I to accomplish? And what should I have done differently?
I think so. And I think, you know, what I also appreciate about that is the way that it makes him, like you said, a little bit regretful, but not conflicted about it.
Yeah.
And also, I think he's a little defensive in this episode, though, in a way, because, you know, Dr. Galen is kind of a jerk. I mean, he's a fine person, and I think he's a little crusty, but he's old. So old people are allowed to be, I suppose. And obviously Picard has a great deal of respect for him, and they're able to portray him in a very short amount of time as a person who's immensely talented and as someone who, I think, because they shortcut it by saying that Picard respects him so much. And I also like,
and not just respects him, again, he says, like, you know, this, I had a dad, but none who understood me. He had kids, but I was the one who followed in his footsteps.
Right.
And that also, frankly, makes the, I think that does justify Galen's response to him. You know, he's being rejected by his son a second time. I mean, there's that one scene when he's, you know, yelling at Picard, and then he just stops and he's just like saying, like, you know, almost heartbroken, like, please just come with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's being rejected by his own son in a way. I mean, we read that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what's really smart about it, of course, is that it doesn't fill in the gaps there. But we know that, you know, if Picard had gone on this, I mean, Picard could take a leave of absence from Starfleet.
Like, I mean, it took them why didn't he just get the Enterprise to do this the first time with Galen, though? Just because this took, you know, the half hour of the episode to fix.
I mean, you know, but I think that, you know, what he's realizing is that, yes, he could take a leave of absence from Starfleet for a year or six months, however long it would take to do this. But they'd find another captain for the Enterprise.
Well, that's it.
When he comes back, you know, what is he going to be doing in Starfleet? He doesn't know. Maybe that's the point at which they would decide, okay, well, you voluntarily took a leave of absence. Mm-hmm. We're not going to give you a ship anymore. We're bumping you up to Admiral, and it goes sit in Starfleet headquarters.
Exactly. You know? I mean, he says the Enterprise is not something I can go back to. I mean, frankly, let's face it. If he went on this expedition, if he left the Enterprise, you know, he would come back. He would do the lecture tour. He would become an academic at this point. You know, this would be he would ask and get a position at any university in the galaxy after this, you know, kind yeah. of thing. And, you know, he's not willing to commit to the second career now. I mean, he's finishing his career as a in Starfleet.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I also think it's interesting in light of the fact that Galen portrays or tries to paint what Picard is doing as captain of the Enterprise as oh, yeah. as being a functionary of an empire just kind of patrolling the roads.
Yeah, he says like, oh, what are you doing? You're scanning something. And we, you know, but I mean, I think that's really funny because as many like bullshit missions as the Enterprise has done, Picard saved the galaxy from the Borg.
Right.
I mean, like, that alone makes your legend.
He's done a lot of stuff. Know? Yeah.
You know, 2 weeks ago, he saved a starship from blowing up, you know, and terrorists and something. You know, like, that's the kind of thing he does. If not every single day it is an adventure, you know. Well, I mean, on the archaeological dig, they're going to spend, you know, weeks cooling their heels in bars while they wait for the next, you know, ship to go. So,
but what I like about that is that, you know, it gives us, you know, we don't see the civilian sort of perspective yeah. that much. And Galen, of course, is a civilian. And, you know, maybe that's how Starfleet is viewed by some people. Or maybe he's just lashing out because he's upset that his adopted son is not going with him. But, you know, it almost harkens back to what Kirk's son says in Star Trek II about all the military is always going to be taking over things. Blah blah blah. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
yeah. And it's almost that kind of thing. It's very interesting that, you know, we know that's not the case. We know that Starfleet is doing really important work, but to other people it may not appear that way. I don't know, you know. And it kind of does color it in a sense, because what Galen is doing is not dissimilar from what the mission of Starfleet is. It's just that they can't communicate it to each other because they're both so stubborn.
Yeah. And they just are both in very different worlds. I mean, and while Galen has kept up on Picard, I'm sure that the more interesting, you know, things he would be more interesting were like, you know, the kinds of missions when Picard went and inspected the star station that was doing an experimental technology, you know, because that's what Galen would be more interested in.
Right.
And so he's really seeing the, you know, day-to-day mundane stuff that Picard's doing. He's seeing him as footnotes and, you know, random reports. Probably half of the really interesting stuff Picard's done has been classified, too. That's
oh, sure, that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's probably not widely known that you know, he had these really, really intimate encounters with the Borg.
Yeah.
It's probably not widely known about the inner light stuff. It's probably not widely known about a lot of the things he's doing. And so what Picard is doing in a sense is that he's kind of, okay, I'm going on diplomatic missions and scanning stars.
Is someone going to tell? Yeah. Are they going to tell the news is not going to say, you know, a few weeks ago, Picard was captured by the Kardashians and tortured. And, you know, that's not going to happen. You know, that entire episode.
Stop calling them Kardashians.
I can't help my accent.
It's not your accent.
Yeah. And that's to your point. You know, we see, you know, he's Captain Picard of the Starship Enterprise and the Federation of Star, you know, the Starfleet Federation. And that's the coolest thing you could ever be, you know.
Right.
Galen is the best architect of his generation, and he's
archaeologist.
Archaeologist of his generation, and his pupil could have been the best archaeologist of his, you know, he could have been the next one, and he threw that away for what, a military career? I mean, that's
kind of what he's looking at it as. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
I still really want those biscuits though, so I'm gonna give this episode 7 biscuits.
I will give this episode 6 biscuits. So if you agree or disagree with us, please leave a comment on the post for this episode at trekaboutshow.com.
If you have a great biscuit recipe, please share.
You can tweet it at us, Trek About Show, or you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekaboutshow. And finally, leave us a review on iTunes. 5 stars only, please.
I mean, you could do 4 stars if you... No, you can do only do 5 stars. Eric's five giving stars. Me the look of death.
Yeah. Next week, we are talking about Frame of Mind and Suspicions.